quorum yet, do we?
We don't have a quorum yet. This is the 11th, it's not the 11th, it's the 13th day of April. And we have a few items on our agenda today. We are short a quorum yet, so we will open a subcommittee of the committee, and we will... Kathy just told me we're going to do this. And we will begin by opening a public hearing on HJR 45. And what do we have here? Okay, we have three folks here to talk about this. Do you all want to come up at the same time? Kay, Richard, Adam. Adam is first one to sign up, so if you tell us all of the great things about HJR 45.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in House Joint Resolution 45. And as the committee knows, this measure would establish a task force to evaluate the issues of water right ownership. And for those of you who have been involved in this issue and have heard the department's take on the issue, we have long supported a broad and deliberative evaluation of these issues, and we want to do that so that we can ensure the success of all the water users in the state of Oregon. And we've also talked to the committee about how water use in this state involves many kinds of partnerships. There's state partnerships, federal partnerships. We have local districts, water users associations, and in some cases, partnerships just between water users. And given this sort of myriad of relationships, the question of water right ownership, as you know, can be extremely complex, a very complex legal issue that's very fact-specific. And it can also be a huge public policy issue depending on the outcome of that kind of deliberation. So we do appreciate the opportunity to have that kind of deliberative discussion. We do have two specific concerns with the joint resolution. Number one, it doesn't include the Water Resources Department as a member of the task force, and we would like to be part of that discussion. And number two, with our reading of the bill, it appears that it predetermines some of the outcomes of the deliberations, and those, again, are two specific concerns that we would have with the joint resolution, but appreciate the chair's leadership in trying to move this issue forward in a positive fashion.
Okay. Maybe it's too early
to ask.
No, I think it's too early.
Certainly our attendance wasn't. I understand it would be line 15 and 16 and 17, that the member of the Senate and the House of Representatives would be attorneys in good standing with the Oregon State Bar. Do you know anything about that, Adam?
Chair Jensen and Representative Tomei, I only know what I'm reading here in the bill, that it sounds like the members would be attorneys.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe somebody else can tell me why that is so. Thank you.
I assume when he discusses his portion of the bill that Mr. Kosasan will maybe answer that question for us. If not, we'll ask it of him. And I think I'm going to call on Richard then at this time to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan, Water for Life. And I think through the efforts of the chair, this bill was introduced, and it's an attempt again to take a more deliberative, long-term approach to this question that remains prevalent in terms of ownership. And it is our attempt to take a very extended look at the entire issue. If you will take a look at page 2, the first literally nine lines, Mr. Sussman indicated that the department might have concerns with a predetermined conclusion, and I would contend that there is a longstanding tradition of ownership, and that question has arisen, and I think it's been addressed by the courts and our Attorney General, and our attempt there was to reflect holdings of a variety of court cases along with the recent opinions of our State Attorney General. It's an attempt to get at some of the issues, and we would support it, and we would request the committee to support the measure. It has undoubtedly some type of fiscal. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So I guess we would consider moving the bill to Ways and Means and hopefully discussing the fiscal impacts to the department and moving forward.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Could you answer the question that I had asked of Adam about why the two members from the legislature would be attorneys in good standing with the Oregon State Bar?
Chair Jensen and Representative Tomei. The concept contained in those provisions found on lines 15, 16, 17, and 18 were to, if the opportunity arose, if the task force found access to one or two attorneys during that interim period to help and assist with the legal aspects of the issue, that was to be encouraged. That was the sole intent. Is that on point with your question?
I think so. I think it's interesting there would be so few members who would qualify for this, so few members of the legislature who would qualify for this.
You're referring to number 2.
Yes, lines 15
line
through 17.
15,
right.
15 through 18, Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And your question, the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House's ability to find two attorneys for this. I'm not exactly sure what your question.
That's exactly it, that there would be few people in the legislature who would qualify to be on this advisory committee.
These people don't have to be from the legislature, do they? Is that your intention?
Oh, I see.
Mr. Chair, it's not our intention.
Oh, I see. I just assumed it would be people from the legislature. I understand.
Quite frankly, Representative, I thought the reason that Mr. Kosselsan was putting that in there was to ensure against the remote possibility that the Speaker of the House would appoint the Chair of the Water Committee to that, and he was wanting at least two attorneys there to try to keep him straightened, keep the Chair of the House Water Committee straightened out.
I think that is a correct assumption, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Does that clear up the
issues? Yes, thank you.
I guess in seriousness in relationship to that, obviously there are a lot of legal questions and legal issues that might come up, and having attorneys on the, or some attorneys, might be perceived by some to be an advantage to be able to explain some of those issues. However, history has it that a lot of bills have passed in the Oregon legislature where there weren't any attorneys really involved in the deliberative process of that. One could question whether those are good bills or not, I suppose, but we'll hopefully somebody will say something, and that way the chair will be able to put the shovel down so he doesn't get any deeper. With that, Kay, would you please go ahead?
Yes, Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I'm Kay Teasel with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and we support Waterfly's efforts with this House joint resolution, and we believe it may be beneficial to have an interim committee to study the water right issue and make a recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Sussman.
Mr. Chair, just one last comment. I just wanted to let the committee know the department's opinion that if the issue of water right ownership had already been determined, then I wouldn't really see a need for this task force. But it's exactly because that issue is in play that we need this kind of effort. And to, again, predetermine the outcome seems a little inconsistent with the intent of the deliberative process.
If I can on that, Adam, when the state Supreme Court hands down a decision, doesn't that fairly well determine an issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think, you know, if we took the time to wheel in a number of legal scholars into the room, I think you'd find a lot of them disagreeing about what the various court decisions and interpretations on this issue are, and that's exactly why we had the kind of debate that we had last legislative session, and even had the, you know, Department of Justice kind of coming in and talking about the ambiguity of the various opinions and decisions. And in fact, we probably wouldn't be spending a tremendous amount of time in the Klamath Basin, for example, in fact, briefing as we speak the issue of, you know, who owns the water right between the patrons, the district, and the federal government. So I don't believe it is a settled issue. And we support the notion of taking this sort of deliberative approach to it, but it seems to defeat the purpose of the proposition if you've determined the outcome.
Adam, even if this body, the House and the Senate, were to pass a bill that gave the water rights to A, and the governor were to sign that bill, and the state Supreme Court were to uphold the constitutionality and legality of that bill, are you suggesting that that would stop this issue from ever being questioned again?
No, I'm not suggesting that, Mr. Chair.
Did you want to respond any further on that, or Richard?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes. In terms of the Klamath situation, I think that's a very, very interesting debate, both Klamath basin-wide, statewide, and I think even nationally in terms of the adjudication process. But to me, that focuses more on the ultimate determination of relative rights as opposed to ownership. And I think if one were to take a look at the case filed on behalf of the district and its patrons in U.S. Federal Court of Claims pertaining to the adjudication process and the takings takings case, you would find that the briefs filed by the districts and the patrons would indicate very clearly that the people in the Klamath believed that the water right was owned by the district patrons and it was appurtenant to the land upon which it was used. So I think that deserves a secondary look. And again, it was our intent with the language contained in the measure to look at the longstanding tradition of like I said, a variety of judicial opinions, as well as, I think, where we believe the state AG came from. Thank you.
I may be misunderstanding you, and I may misunderstand a number of things here, but were you saying or suggesting that a U.S. Court of Appeals is having some sort of say in who owns water rights? It would be my opinion that this is a state, it's waters of the state, and this is not something that I would see grounds for a federal court to be determining water rights in the state.
And Mr. Chair, that's correct. The case, the takings case, dealt with the allocation and delivery of water, and it was a takings case, I believe, filed in 2003, I don't recall, with respect to the farmers being detrimentally impacted as a result of water distribution in the past.
Other questions?
I have a quick one, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, and I don't know who to address this to, but it's about a point that Adam raised. I'm just curious why the Water Resources Department is not part of this task force. So that's number one. And two is, then who would administer, run the task force? Is that a legislative duty? And I want to know if there's a referral to Ways and Means then. For that.
There is a referral to Ways.
I don't have the cover sheet, so. But I'm just curious. I would think you'd want to have the department there, especially on some of these issues that we've been talking about today.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dingfelder, it was not our intent to exclude the Water Resources Department. I think it was our intent to try to very objectively outline the major participants in what we construed to be a very equitable manner in terms of locations, people inside districts, outside districts, for an even balanced task force. But we would have no objection at all in terms of having a participatory role on behalf of the Water Resources Department.
So you'd have no objection to amending accordingly?
None whatsoever.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Wait a minute. No, it's fine for now. We'll get back to it. Having seen Ms. McNitt come in after, it strikes me that there might be a reason that she'd want to testify on this. And if there is, we would ask her to come ahead. But we are on HJR 45, as you probably can
see. Have you opened up the public meeting, or are we still in the subcommittee?
We're still in the subcommittee. We'll close the subcommittee, open the full committee, now that we have a resource, and continue our discussion, a public hearing on HJR 7. Thank you, Representative. HJR 45, excuse me.
Thank you, Chairman Jensen and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and I appreciate your continued indulgence in my conflicts. I've been downstairs on the main floor and up here and back and forth, and I'm actually more intrigued by the discussion here than I am downstairs, but be that as it may. House Joint Resolution 45, I appreciate the sponsor's effort to create an equitable task force to sit down and discuss some of the issues, the ownership issue that is a recurring theme session after session and, frankly, bill after bill. And we are very supportive of an effort to put together a task force to discuss these issues. And, in fact, a legislatively directed task force might well be the answer to some of the difficulties we found this session after we kind of voluntarily as a group entered into workforce last interim with the Water Resources Department at the direction of Senator Ted Farrioli, and then dealt with what we thought was a compromise, but when we got to the legislative session, that kind of fell apart. So maybe through a vehicle like House Joint Resolution 45, that would be the answer to investing some legislative effort and attention into this task force. We do have concerns, however, on the second page, and that's simply with just predetermining outcomes of this task force. And we would suggest amendments to House Joint Resolution 45 that would just allow the task force to run its course and to delve into the issues that are outlined on the first page, but not predetermine any outcomes by the work of this group of individuals, whoever they may be. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Are there questions? So you're not comfortable with the task force being required to be consistent with the doctrine of prior appropriation?
Mr. Chair and members for the committee, I think that would be a foregone conclusion if we sat together as a group and talked about existing water law. I mean, that kind of by definition is the doctrine of prior appropriation.
I understand your concerns and appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else that hasn't signed up that wants to weigh in? And once again, I see Water Watch with a grin on their face as we deal with problems of this type. No further questions of the committee. With that, we will close the public hearing on HJR 45, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2130. Sandy, would you please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As you remember, we had a public hearing on House Bill 2130 on March 7th. The measure would allow a person to submit a preliminary wetland jurisdictional determination report to the Department of State Lands. Before I go any further on the original bill, I want to bring to your attention you have a two amendments, which basically is replacing that original bill, deleting pages 2 through 21, and inserting just the repeal language that ORS 196-840, and that repeal language currently specifies that state agencies that request closures of waters, state waters, for removal fill purposes must make a request to the Water Resources Commission. This amendment is repealing that statute. And that, again, that's the dash two amendments dated April 6, 2005.
You all have those?
No,
I can't find them.
Do you not have it in your packet?
No.
You're obviously going to have them very quickly.
Good. Right. You should have had an SMS with the amendment attached to it.
Mm-mm.
Which 2130?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Attached.
Just the chair.
Well,
no, I just got this from Sandy. Yeah.
Oh, I'm live.
There you go. Thank you.
So
yeah.
Do you
want to
make
the
dash
twos?
This one.
You want to make them for the dash twos?
Yes, I want.
And Mr. Lilly is here.
This. Yes.
John Lilly is here to speak to the.
We need
to meet
him. No, I apologize. We got it now?
Yeah.
We're all right.
Ralph.
And understand, I think as staff was talking about it, on page one of the printed bill, line two, after state, delete the rest of the line and delete lines three and four, and then insert repealing 196-840, and then delete lines 6 through 7, and pages 2 through 21. If this sounds to you
like a gut and stuff,
if it looks like a gut and stuff, then sure enough, that's probably what it is. I do see that Mr. Lilly is here, and there have been discussions with the agency in relationship to this. Would you care to come forward, please, John? Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Department of State Lands. I would only add my explanation that the department is comfortable with the amendment. We do understand that there are other amendments being worked on that would be considered for, I believe it's House Bill
2265,
where we would move the amendments that we're deleting, or we would offer to you the opportunity to move the amendments that you're deleting into 2265. And I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you, John. I think what we have here, if you recall, this original bill on ORS 196840, was that 2265 then?
Yes, sir.
Had to do, if you want to, have a quick look at that, had to do with an archaic statute in the ORSs that has never been used, and no one has ever figured out if, when, and why, or where it should be used. And this was a bill that was brought to us by Legislative Council, precision filed, in attempts to clean up the language, because they had the, if you remember the testimony was that water resources had the responsibilities in here, and instead, if this were to be applicable, it probably should have been DSL, and water resources didn't know anything about it, hadn't used it, probably didn't even know it was in the statute. The same thing was true with DSL. And after a little more, while I understand that it may be even constitutional problem for us, what we have proposed to do is to save a little paper and in the Oregon Revised Statutes and simply delete 196840 rather than leave something in the statute that's never been used and probably never will be used. We have some other things that we wanted to perhaps do, the reason for the move we're making here was to make sure that the things we were doing conform to the relating clause that is in House Bill 2265 and in House Bill 2130 that we're currently dealing with. So in that respect, it's kind of a technical fix type of thing is where we're at right now with it. And yes, if you're ready, Representative, I would like to have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2130 be adopted.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any discussion or questions from the committee on the motion or on the intent? If there's no discussion, is there any objection? Hearing no objections, so ordered then. And, yes, colleagues, I don't want to move the bill just yet. And if you remember, one of the things that we said when we first looked at the bill and had our first conversations about the bill, that this bill has a marvelous relating clause. And in light of the fact we don't know what some of you all are going to come and request between now and a time when we have to move the bill, we're going to hang on to it so that we've got a vehicle readily available until it becomes apparent that we've solved all of the water problems of the state for this session and have moved on. Okay? And
we can have who owns the water rights in here.
Right?
Go there.
Well, we could go there, so with that, then we will close the work session for now on House Bill 2130. We have House Bill 2882. We will open a work session on House Bill 2882. And, Sandy, would you update us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, 2882 is back before us for a work session. We had a public hearing on this bill on March 21st. This, as you recall, this bill requires that the water quality standards established by the Environmental Quality Commission meet certain scientific criteria, that the Commission consider natural factors in developing quality standards and purity standards for the waters of the state. We have a -2 amendment, hopefully behind your SMS. Before I go any further, can we...
Yay.
I also did a quick hand and gross of that bill. This makes two changes.
I don't have one, Sandy.
I know. There. Do you have the original bill?
Yeah, we have the original bill.
Okay. There's only two changes on...
There you go. Amendments.
She'll get them for us.
Yeah, it's right here.
Thank you.
Oh, I bet I got
it. Yeah. I think your packets might have gotten mixed up with your other materials because these got it. The other members have them. Anyway, Mr. Chair, continuing on, the two changes that are in the -2 amendments dated April 6th, page 1, line 25, after defensible, it put you insert methods, and then on line 26, after collection, you insert an interpretation. So section 1, subsection 2B, it would say, be developed using regular scientifically defensible methods and professionally approved procedures for the collection and interpretation of credible data, including appropriate quality control and assurance and adequate sampling and the use of controlled specimens. The department is here. I believe everybody, if you have any questions or concern.
Okay. Let's see. This cattleman here. I don't know, has anybody signed up?
No.
No, there's no sign up.
Nobody has.
This bill was initially introduced by the chair at the request of the Oregon Cattlemen. We are asking them to come up and tell us whether they're happy with it or whether they're unhappy. What sort of information they have for us.
Yes, we agree with the amendments.
We're
happy with the amendments.
You agree with the amendments? Okay. Are there any questions for folks there? Okay. Is there any discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, do we have anybody from DEQ here? They had some questions about the bills, I recall, from March at a hearing.
Jim, please.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
I don't think it was you, it was you, Jim, who had some questions about this bill. Could you tell me if you still have questions about the bill?
Yes, Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei. The comments that we made at the earlier hearing on this bill came down to essentially evaluating whether or not we currently follow these types of objectives or what this bill is trying to go through. And from our agency's analysis, we believe that we actually already have these types of steps that we physically work through when we go through a standard setting process or when we go through any type of analytical work, whether it's for sampling or monitoring or part of a larger study or part of really a statewide type of monitoring program. So it was a matter of redundancy and just a matter of whether or not this would be an added value for the agency.
Follow up. So would this give the agency more work to do, Tim?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, no. We don't anticipate that this would present us with any more work than we currently go through in terms of our standards process.
So
follow up.
So when you talk about redundancy, for whom would it be redundant?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, the redundancy is just a matter of whether or not we physically need to have this type of language in statute when we already feel that language similar to this is already present within our monitoring and within our sampling protocol that we have integrated within the agency's programs.
Thank you, Jim.
Other questions from DEQ?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but just a comment.
Please.
And I've spent quite a bit of time looking at this issue. Actually, I wanted to thank Kay because she responded. I had asked Kalman to provide me with specific examples of where they've seen issues or had concerns about sampling. And I just wanted to thank Kay because she did follow up, and then I followed up with DEQ and had them respond to those concerns. And I have to say I felt, and with all due respect to the chair, because I know that you sponsored this on behalf of the cattlemen, but I didn't feel, based on the responses that I saw to the questions that you had raised, and I have that information here if any of the other members would like to see it, I didn't feel that this bill was necessary. I felt there was a bit of redundancy that the agency, through their sampling the operations that they currently have in place for quality assurance and quality control were already covered. I've done quite a bit of sampling in my experience working with watersheds, and I personally felt that what I'd like to see, and I'll give you a little bit of example here, is I'd like to see a position funded to the agency, or more positions funded, to assist watershed councils with technical technical assistance for water quality monitoring, because we are also relying a lot on volunteers in addition to the agency, who's very overworked. We had an excellent position with the agency on helping train watershed coordinators and also volunteers through watershed councils and SWCDs, and that's the type of thing I would like to see us putting our resources in to help make sure that we get additional information at high quality. But I personally felt that this bill was redundant, so I will be a no.
Would you like to respond to that, Kay?
Yes, Chair Jensen and Representative Silver. The Powder River Basin paper that we provided you explains how to test to see if you have enough samples. And DEQ does not have any process in place to verify they're collecting field data properly. They need to verify that they have enough samples and that they are collecting it properly in the field. And that's our position.
And I don't know, this is a two-page memo, which I don't probably think you want to read here on the record, but maybe that's something we should make copies for the committee just so they have it, but I felt that the agency had adequately addressed those concerns. I agree, the more samples, the better. I mean, always, because you're just going to get a better average in the end. However, that's one of the problems we face here in this building. When we're cutting agency budgets, okay, at the same time that we're asking for more samples, I don't think passing a law is going to solve that problem. And so what I'm saying is I think we can address some of the concerns that you've raised through adequately funding the agencies to do the type of work that we'd like to be seen in sampling. Part of the response that I saw was many of those samples were not collected by DEQ. They were collected by other agencies. And that's the whole QA, QC portion that I was mentioning again that we need more technical assistance for. So I don't know if I could share this with the committee. I'd be happy to do that because this responds to some of the concerns.
That's fine. I mean, we could you can share that with the committee. I would I suppose have a question of the agency, though. If in fact the agency believes that they are conforming to scientific standards, scientific protocols, then the agency would have no problem with this particular legislation. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, that's correct. We don't have any opposition to this bill. Again, it just is a question of what we currently do, and we think it meets the overall intent of the legislation.
It would have application only in those cases where the agency or an agency might fail to follow appropriate scientific protocols.
That's correct.
Yes, Representative Barnhart. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused. Would you describe situations in which you would use control specimens, which is one of the requirements of on line 27 of the bill?
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, I may not be the best technical person to be able to respond to that, but I think generally within a scientific process, when you go through a scientific method, you're going to want to have a control so that you have the ability to evaluate some particular test against, so that you know what would be, like, say, the baseline, or know how a particular animal may respond to basic water versus how it would respond to water with a different concentration of a particular toxic, for example. But my scientific background on those methods is somewhat limited.
So, if I could follow up, you would read this language then to be that you would use control specimens for the purpose of making sure that the equipment was properly calibrated? Is that the way is that what this line means as far as your understanding is?
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, I'm not sure about the total application or what all the words are going to mean in terms of how it would be physically implemented throughout DEQ's work. But I think it would be reasonable to think that in terms of calibration that would be probably part of a step process that you would go through.
Go ahead. This is a different topic, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. C, under that section, recall the section says standards established under this section shall. And then C, take into account natural contaminants or other natural factors that may affect the quality and purity of the waters of this state. What do you think that requires the department to do?
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, my perspective on what C does is requires us just to take a look at what the natural conditions are like in the state or in a particular water body when we go through our evaluation process. So for an example, when we go through the development of total maximum daily loads, we are able to look at some of the natural conditions that might be present out there. For example, there may be temperatures water temperatures that are just naturally warmer than what a physical standard might be. And when we go through that TMDL standard for that particular basin, we would be able to take that into account. And that's something that we've been incorporating and been doing within our TMDL program.
Follow-up, if I may. Thank you. So this would not have an effect on what the... In your current protocol, this would not have an effect on what the standards are. It would have an effect on the application of the standards? Or have I misunderstood your point?
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, you're correct. We would have an issue in essentially how we would be applying a physical standard out there. We'd have to take into account natural conditions or some of the natural contaminant levels that might already be out there, and just a sense of, again, trying to establish a baseline.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I just want to provide an example maybe to help clarify the question that Representative Barnhart brought up, because when I was working in the Tualatin Basin, when we were working on the total maximum daily load, one of the biggest issues in the Tualatin was the amount of phosphorus in the Tualatin River. And one of the things that we worked very, very closely with DEQ on was looking at what the baseline level of phosphorus was. Because just so you understand, that way the parties that were involved in the management agency, so to speak, in implementing the TMDL plan, they weren't expected to minimize the amount of phosphorus going in beyond what was naturally occurring in the river. So we worked very hard at setting the baseline, worked very closely with DEQ, and I would expect that they would do that on other water bodies as well. And that's really important, because you don't want to be asking somebody to clean something up to a level that goes beyond what's reasonable.
And then to follow up on that, if I may, Mr. Chair. And that's what the agency does now.
That's correct.
Thank you. Other questions? The chair would entertain a motion to move the dash two amendment.
Mr. Chair. I would move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2882.
Representative Cummell moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2882. Is there any objection? Any discussion on the amendment? Objections to the amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Cummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill... This is going to the floor?
Yes.
I would move House Bill 2882 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cummell moves House Bill 2882 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just would reiterate the points I brought up before. I do feel it's redundant, and I will be a no on the bill. But I think it's been an interesting discussion. I think it's important that these issues get raised, but I don't feel like this bill is necessary, and I'd like to see us put our emphasis on making sure that the agency has enough resources to... What I'd like to see is more technical assistance, so the parties that work with DEQ are also properly trained on the sampling techniques, as was identified in this memo here from DEQ.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? I would just make a comment to Representative Dankfelder in relationship to the bill. And I appreciate her discussion of redundancy, though it's been a few years ago, but if I remember my methodologies courses, redundancy is the name of science, or another name for science. So at least being redundant here in this legislature couldn't be considered unscientific. you may or may not consider
it. True. Necessary, but it isn't unscientific. I couldn't argue with you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And with that little rejoinder, we'll call the roll, please.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Falto?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
No.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
No.
Vice Chair Kremel?
Aye.
Chair Jensen?
Aye. Having received a majority, House Bill 2882 is passed with a due pass recommendation, and will go to the floor. And I need a carrier. I can't get this on the consent, Caroline.
Right, who's on the consent calendar? Mr. Chair.
I would make the motion, but I don't think it would do any good.
I kind of gathered that. If no one wants to carry the bill other than Representative Dingfelder, the chair will carry it and save the... thank you very much. With that, the work session on House Bill 2882 is closed. And we're back to...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I apologize for not bringing this up beforehand. Do you want me to carry that bill for you? I'd be glad to.
If you'd like to, that'd be fine.
I will.
Okay.
Sure. Go ahead and put me down.
Representative Kremel would like to carry the bill, and that would be fine.
I don't know if I'd like to. No, I do. No, I'm just kidding, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to.
What do you mean? I closed the work session. And we're back up to House Bill 2367, which is carried over from... Up until 2367, we will open a public hearing then on House Bill 2367, and I thought we'd... Okay. And would you tell us about this bill? And I see Brendan McCarthy is here, and he's going to walk us line by line, step by step, page by page, through this bill. In addition to which, we have some other public testimony being requested, and there's got to be some real major problems here, but we'll okay. Did I open the public hearing? We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2367, and Brendan McCarthy, please. Good afternoon, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Committee. Thank
hope
you.
Everything worked out okay.
Thanks for adjusting your schedule for me. The
problem.
Only people who work on a different time schedule worse than the legislative time is contractor time. And he was supposed to be there at 8:30 this morning, and at 10 after 10 he rolled up to put in my new door. So other than that, he was just finishing up when I was leaving, so it would have worked out just fine.
Okay, thanks.
So... House Bill 2367, once again, Brendan McCarthy from Legislative Council for the record. 2367 is
in my district.
Was requested by you, Mr. Chair, from me, and introduced sponsored by the committee here. I spoke once before on this bill when the committee was considering it for introduction. The general thought process that I went through on this bill was to attempt to conform terminology throughout water law related to a person who uses water with a water right, be that person be called a user or a holder or an owner, or a person with a water right appurtenant to their property, or any of the other two or three or four or six different ways we've referred to this person who has a use right of water. Looking through the statutes and looking at the various terminology used, it appeared to me in my review that holder of a water right was the predominant term. And that does not mean that, I had any specific intent to say anything or do anything that would cause people to get too much heartburn. I was not making a presumption that there is no such thing as a owner of a water right. It was merely an attempt to say, this is the predominant usage. If we're going to conform, then we should stay with the predominant usage. Okay. There certainly are some people who will probably testify after me who will display some of that heartburn, and I cannot say whether it is justified or not, that there will be differences of opinion as to what changing a term from owner to holder means. I can say that I am not aware of any particular case which has come down, which has shown any sort of distinction from the courts that they believe that there's a difference between an owner of a water right and a holder of a water right. Once again, my review was, and my changing terminology in this bill was not an attempt to really get involved in that debate, but only to conform terminology. And with that, I'd be happy to discuss the bill line by line, section by section, or pick out highlights if you need to discuss particular instances. But again, I guess I want to add one more thing. Other than the predominant usage, we do, when we refer to other licenses or permits, Fish and Wildlife would be an example, we do talk about a person who holds a permit. It's a very common term. I'm not sure why that way of referring to someone who holds a permit or a license or a certificate could not be drawn into the cases where it was not in water law and used to say, this is what we refer to this entity as a person who has this piece of paper that says you have a use right or you have a right to hunt or you have a right to drive a car or whatever. So I don't think it's out of place. And that's about it. So I will be happy to answer any questions or move on at any speed that you wish.
Brendan, just to kind of clarify here then, what you have gone through or what you've done with this is go through the, chapter 537, 540, 539, 540, 541, and that appears to be it. And in all of those places where this language appears, have inserted the idea or concept of holder. Is that correct? Water right holder?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It would have been a review from chapters 536 through 541. Inclusive.
Okay.
I did stop at 541. I assume that there may be instances, although I did review those instances, there may be instances where there may be some terminology that is not the same, although I believe I was fairly good in doing my searches to find the different terms. So there may be a term, say, in 543A, for example, and I can't confirm that there is, but there may be a reference to a water right holder, and obviously that would not have been included in the bill.
And you've apparently also used substituted local government, public corporation, or water right holder for what?
Mr. Chair, occasionally when I saw a term that to me was could have been shored up a little bit in some sense. We do have a standard definition of local government now. We do have a standard definition of public body now. When many of these statutes were passed, we did not. I took the opportunity in some places to add a reference to those terms just so that people would know what we're referring to. Personally, I do have a... it is difficult sometimes when you just say local government. It's a little unclear as to what that potentially could mean.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Brendan on this? Representative Barner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you were working on this bill, is there any guidance on this terminology issue from other Western states or other states with similar holdership laws to us, or courts in those other states about the different potential meanings of these terms and whether we're actually shifting in some subtle way the meanings of these statutes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that is an excellent question and one that I do not have an excellent answer for. If we were to use this bill as a jumping-off point for further discussions, which I believe, I sort of get the sense, may be coming with the task force, I believe that's a direction we should definitely look into. That's an excellent idea.
If I can follow on Representative Barnhart's question or concern here, are most of the Western states' water law as convoluted as Oregon's?
Mr. Chair, I can't competently answer that question. Most of the Western states have a similar water rights basic rule that we do, in a first-in-time, first-in-right kind of system. But I can't tell you whether they are as convoluted or less convoluted than, or even that ours is particularly convoluted.
I suspect unless other Western states have taken some considerable effort or means to rewrite their laws, they probably are kind of a jigsaw puzzle sort of thing too. But that's
Mr. Chair, I can imagine that any system of laws that date back as far as this system does, as time moves on, begin to be more and more complicated. So I can imagine other states have similar problems with inconsistencies.
Yeah. And states that historically wouldn't have had good precedent from other parts of the nation for this type of water laws, since we're generally talking about the arid regions of America, and they generally were developed later than the eastern parts of and the central parts of our country. So that unlike many laws that one might find, you can probably trace some origins of those laws and statutes back to the statutes on the East Coast, but with water law that probably is not applicable, sort of thing. And of course, you know, the city folks all that I have left with us here, mostly in the committee, all think of the country folks as kind of hayseeds there anyway, so we get that. Let's have some of the other folks. If you'd hang on, Brendan, until we're through here. We've only got three people who are signed up, I think, to testify on this, Water Resource Department. And then we have Doug Meyer and Katie Fast, and I was puzzling here as I look at this because I see Katie and Doug are on the same side as far as this bill is concerned. And is that a first in time?
It doesn't happen very often.
Okay, would you all come forward and Adam to make sure that this isn't something too contagious, would you sit in the middle so that
that might help. You want to get too close, huh?
we got to be careful here, you know, with it. Where we get alliances, and Adam, of course, is obligated to be more or less neutral on these things because he is a public servant for us here, but he has signed up in favor of the bill, I think. No, he signed up admitting, I guess they're all against the bill. No, nothing was...
No position.
Okay, all right. Please, Adam, would you proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, for the record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2367. I think Brendan has done a good job of describing what the bill does. And I would just want to say that the department, of course, supports the objective of working diligently to clarify and streamline Oregon's water code. We do that all the time, either through our administrative rules that implement the statutes, or in this case, we have some bills where this session we actually eliminated statutes that we thought were ambiguous or no longer needed. So we support that effort. This is probably not an understatement if I say that many people would agree that the code that we work with now is complex and in some cases pretty ambiguous. And so we do, again, support this kind of effort. At the same time that I say that, though, I want to say, and I think you'll hear from my counterparts here, that we recognize as you make this kind of effort that the state's water use stakeholders and the department are going to have specific concerns about specific changes to the statute and are going to want to have ample time to evaluate and digest and debate probably the potential legal and policy ramifications of the various changes that may be made here. So I want to remind the committee that we've said this before, that the department's ability to implement the law is directly proportional to the consensus of the meaning of the law or the administrative rule. And so for this reason, we want to make sure that, to the extent that we can, when we make these kinds of changes to build consensus. And Mr. Chair, I think the forum that could be created in the next bill that I think we're going to talk about, House Bill 2812, the Task Force on Water Law Reform, may be the best place to continue this kind of discussion that we've started. So, again, I appreciate the Chair's leadership in bringing these kinds of issues forward and having the opportunity to discuss them, and we look forward to continuing to work on these kinds of efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Katie?
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2367, and Farm Bureau appreciates Chair Jensen's attempt to open discussion and try to address a fairly conflicted issue and one that does need some clarity. While this deals with the issue of ownership and the definition of maybe who owns the water and trying to streamline the language that's used in the statute, it doesn't solve the debate. And our concern is that it would now shift that debate from owner to holder. And as with many of the organizations that are working on this issue, we have concerns that if this isn't solved legislatively, it's going to be solved by the courts. And it would just shift that debate from owner to holder at the legislative level and at the court level as well. We also have some concerns with some language changes. In Section 1, vested is removed from talking about vested water rights. In Section 3, there's a removal of perfected or certificated when talking about water rights. We have some concerns about the impacts of those removals and of talking about specific types of water rights. However, I think there is an opportunity to continue this discussion and possibly a combination of the three bills that the committee is discussing today, and taking aspects of HJR 45, House Bill 2812, and this bill 2387 or 2367 is a good direction to go and allow the appropriate stakeholders to be part of the discussion and hopefully at some point we can come forward with this with a good solution to this. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Kay.
Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to my smiling at when HDR 45 closed the hearing, sometimes this is between who owns the water. It's best to know when to duck. With regard, Doug Myers again, representing Water Watch. House Bill 2367, for the reasons that both Adam and Katie suggested, we have the same questions. Holder and owner, we have a problem with that. For example, in irrigation districts, the holder of the right, the entity whose name is on the right, may be the district. But the landowner whose land the water is appurtenant to may claim to be the owner. That's a problem for some in the room. Another example is in-stream rights. Water Resources Department is the holder of the right, but the real owner of the right are the people of the state of Oregon. And those are just two examples that Karen Russell picked out. And again, it's probably a good idea to be developed in the interim, whether part of the 2812 or some other forum. I think that would be a good place for it to go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Adam wants to come back up and... yes. Question, I assume.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy, once again, something that I just thought of when I did sit down, and Katie was certainly correct in that this doesn't necessarily solve the question of the actual ownership or holdership of a water right. However, from a legal perspective, I think that there is a goodness also in conforming terms in that courts sometimes do say, well, if a different term was used, they must have meant something else. And the more different terms we use to refer to that same entity, the worse off it gets. So, and that's not a plug for this House Bill 2367 in particular, but it is a plug for doing what I think the committee wants to do, which is to do, to streamline this terminology.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate you bringing up Representative Barnhart. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you respond to the last couple of comments that the panel made about the difference between a district that's the holder, but the owner may be a landowner who has an appurtenant right? How does that fit into this scheme, or this I use the word scheme in the British sense, and I better not do that here. This plan for reforming, for changing the statutes. Would both of those people be holders in some form, or what have you done with that issue in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's... a difficult answer, thing for me to answer, at least politically.
I was hoping for a legal answer rather than that. We're not interested in a political answer.
We have to make that up ourselves.
It was my attempt to not alter that landscape as far as what each entity, in the case of an irrigation district,
so
had as far as a right to use water.
By that, I assume that means that the ambiguity, which some people at least perceive to be in the statute, would continue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I believe that, as I said when I first came up, that Katie did have an excellent point in that
this bill would not necessarily resolve that issue, but merely shift the terms of the debate.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. That was my understanding of what you had with it. Yeah. Mr. Kosasan would like to. You want to bring legal counsel with you too?
Well, you're the legal counsel. You sit
here. I thought you brought your own legal counsel. I didn't think they'd let you come without.
Mr. Chair, they probably shouldn't let me come by myself. For the record, Richard Kosasan, Water for Life. And I think most of the comments that we were going to contemplate making have been made. Some considerations with the bill, however, I agree with Mr. McCarthy in terms of trying to take this issue a long-term view and provide some consistency. I think that might be beneficial. But in terms of this differential between holder and owner, I would encourage a future look in and with a focus on terms of owners and users, specifically in terms of the irrigation field. The user has been determined, long-standing determination, that the user is the one who is the actual person applying the water to beneficial use and therefore the owner of that right. So rather than move to a point of trying to modify terminology to holder, I would encourage that terminology to focus on the owner and the user. But I think the bill deserves further discussion. I think Katie Fast hit on a couple of points, but there are a couple of areas, too. If you look at the modifications contained in sections 27, 28, and 29, with respect to the language in Chapter 539, which deals with water right adjudications, I think that deserves very close scrutiny. And again, the language contained in Section 45, page 32, dealing with cancellation of water rights, I think that deserves very close scrutiny also. With that, Mr. Chairman, that would conclude anything I should say or probably should not say.
Thank you, Richard. I really appreciate your comments and testimony of the questions. Question that did come up about legislative councils, you know, bring this forward, and it's probably important to note that Brandon was working at somewhat the direction of the interim chair, I guess, of the subcommittee on House subcommittee on water, and looking at this and trying to find some areas, find some consistency, find some things to in the statutes that maybe we could address. A point has previously been made that there are a couple of other bills that attempt to or that will deal with this, and it probably if House Bill 2812 that we'll work open a public hearing on in just a second, if that were to be adopted, it probably would be something of presumptuous on our part to pass out this bill, because it would seem that this bill might then be a something of a place for that task force in 2812 to, you know, to be used as a jumping off spot, though it isn't our intention to use this bill as, you know, in that regard. So unless there are questions on this, we will close at this point the public hearing on House Bill 2367, and open a public hearing on 2812. And staff is desperately trying to remind me that I am committed to having a public hearing on 2812 on Monday. I think they've indicated the 18th even, to make sure that I got it all correct with this and not just half correct. Before not wanting to adjourn, because there may be people here today that wanted to testify on 2812, that would find it awkward or inconvenient to come back on Monday to testify again at that particular time, I wanted to open the public hearing on 2812. We still have a few minutes left in the time, and if anyone is signed up or wants to proceed on this, pardon me. Nobody has signed up, apparently. They've all gotten. You have signed up, Adam?
I thought I did. And I could testify on Monday and be fine, Mr. Chair.
He can come back on Monday.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about it, you're going to be here anyway. So seeing no one that wants to jump into this task force concept today, we will not proceed except to announce, much to the chagrin of Representative Dingfelder, I know, and Representative Tomei, that there will be no committee hearing on Friday, April 15th.
No. You're crushed. She's devastated.
Is she?
She is.
Oh.
You won't know what to do with your afternoon, will you?
No.
You might have to go home early.
You've ruined my whole weekend.
I'm sure we can get legislative counsel to maybe come in and, brief you on some of the bills.
You can ruin my weekend.
Huh? Okay. With that, then, we close the House Water Committee for today, April 15th.